Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm honored to have a YPO friend from Italy, Luca Minieni, with me. Luca, welcome to the show.
Ashutosh, thanks a lot for having me here.
Thank you. Luca is the former chief operating officer of the Campbell Soup Company. He's been with IGLO Group, SC Johnson, and as I mentioned, he's a fellow YPO member. So, Luca, tell me, what would you say are three key milestones in your life or your career?
I think, you know, it's kind of hard sometimes to differentiate life, career. There is all this discussion about work-life balance.
Yeah,
I believe if you have a certain type of career, that's part of your life balance. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is no way that you can kind of, you know, be running a big company and then go golfing, you know, every day until 12 o'clock. So correct. I believe there is a big connectivity. And the other thing, maybe just as a premise, is that the biggest influence probably is your family. Not probably, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And you don't choose the family you're born. So there is a lot of things that we can influence to a certain extent. Just correct. You know, I believe it's important kind of understand that we are living in a world where you don't control everything. I would say the first big important piece for me was the big desire of having an international career. And so I decided, to leave Italy in the early 90s to follow, a project that was supposed to be 6 months. And 6 months basically became 25 years or whatever. So that was the first step. I picked up a job with a person that became, by the way, one of the most important mentors in my life, and was the guy that gave me the chance to become general manager at a very, very young age.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, I would say, the first element, because I'm a curious person. I want to learn things by getting lost somewhere and figure out, you know, how things work. And I think that's a very effective way of learning. So that was the first one. The second one was the decision to change from SC Johnson and move out. I had a major issue with my health and so I decided to change, you know, job and try the private equity world. The private equity world is a kind of different business model from what you do in a regular company plus. You know, I was more than 20 years in Johnson, and even though I lived, you know, in 8 different nations or 9, whatever, you still work in the same company. You know, so I was in China, I was in Latin America, I was in Western Europe, but still it's the same company. So the shock of leaving a place where you know everything and everybody, knowing and exactly understanding what are the non-rhythm rules in a company, that was a major learning, a shock and a learning. I think you know, those three things often go hand in hand. And I would say the third step was to leave the private equity to move to US. Because, you know, at the end of the day, if you work in consumer goods, that is still the biggest market in the world.
Correct.
So in terms of size, and size, you know, actually, I mean, you're based in India. I mean, India is a big country and a very complex country.
Correct.
US is, I would say, you know, with all due respect, I think it's a bit simpler than India under many, many areas. So I think, you know, size not always gives the complexity, but obviously, you know, I get to manage this, you know, $10 billion company. And obviously, professionally, that was a big step change in terms of publicly owned company, by the way.
So, Luca, I think those are great milestones. Now, you know, when I was reading about you, you've been through a life-changing experience. And you also mentioned that you went through some challenges. Would you like to talk about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's, by the way, you know, in YPO, I had a chance to talk about it in Singapore with, you know, YPO.
At Edge.
Yeah, Edge. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this is a classic, you know, this is a classic kind of challenge that I think many people like us have. We think that our body, you know, can be managed like, you know, a company P&L. So you kind of withdraw resources and then later on you are going to fix it and whatever. And unfortunately, your body cannot be as forgiving as you know, a financial structure. So yeah, what happened is that I went through a very simple, you know, I had an issue. I had a surgery that was supposedly simple and became a kind of nightmare. I had a massive sepsis I was 6 months in the hospital. I was basically dying. I mean, I gave my last will to my wife, by the way. So that's serious. And basically, you know, the key change in terms of not just career, but the value of time then gets a totally different meaning. So, you know, when you're ambitious, I mean, and again, I think I believe to get somewhere, you need ambitions. Now, between the arrogance and ambition, the divide is a very, you know, is a very fine line. But the problem is that, you know, maybe in the past, if you had to invest a lot of time to just, you know, just to do a step which was kind of useful to make a step forward, you would have done it. I'm in a position now that if I have to waste, I would say my time, definitely I would never do that because, again, I'm happy every morning I wake up. And so,
so tell me, you know, when one goes through such a life-changing experience, what would you say were two or three of your key learnings?
But first of all, the level of introspection that such a situation gives you is higher than a normal situation because, look, I don't know if people can change. It's hard to change people, very hard. But I believe one key, I believe, situation where you can change if you go under a very extreme situation. And I think, you know, when you believe, I mean, the doctor are telling you that you're not going to make it. I think, you know, at that point in time, you kind of go through analyzing things is a much slower motion. And so I think one of the learning is, you know, you run, you have this tunnel vision and you lose all the color that life provides you. That's a very simple element. The second element for me personally, is that I had no regrets beyond the fact that actually what happened to me, I did it. So there was the regret of having behaved like an idiot, not following medical advice and all that. But beyond that, my life, the life I led was the life I wanted. And so there was no regret kind of mentality in that sense. I would say the last thing is that, and that's completely personal, death was not, not a problem. Was the process of dying, which was a problem. And so because I was in terrible pain, I was under morphine and nothing was working. That was the piece that, you know, obviously big fear, I think, is about the process, not about what happened after. I think in each of us may have different beliefs about it. But
amazing. Well, I just pray for a very, very long and healthy life from you. So, fantastic. What an experience. Thank you for sharing this. You know, this is amazing. So now let's talk a little bit about, you know, you as an FMCG marketing guru. With, you know, so much experience in, you know, with FMCG brands, tell me what goes into building a successful brand?
I mean, that's a, I mean, Ashutosh, as you can imagine, that's a big question.
But I know.
I, you know, let me kind of try to summarize what I believe makes, you know, what is a brand and what, you know, what is real value in a brand. Well, the value, the true value of a brand is a long lasting relationship that this brand has with consumer. You know, all the value that is connected to the brand is connected to this relationship, which is long-term with consumer that give you the, that give the brand the trust and the buy and the repeat buying. That's, you know, I think a very trust is a very key word to me, especially in a world, you know, in food, especially where you, you know, there's a lot of talking about what's inside your food and all that. So we can talk about that later if you want, but that's one piece. So to me, the key essence of creating a brand is providing a benefit, which is highly differentiated. And I'm talking, when I talk about brand, I mean, a brand that has an equity, a uniqueness on certain specific, you know, areas. So I'm not talking about a private label. I'm not talking about, you know, an undifferentiated good. So the idea of having a brand that is providing a differentiated benefit is not a static concept. It's a dynamic concept, which means you need to renew constantly. And sometimes is a, you know, is a minor upgrade. Sometimes is a major upgrade. But you need to keep the brand relevant, providing, you know, the benefit that consumer is expecting from you, and keeping the distance from the people that are trying to get to you. You know, which are. So, you know, this is a very kind of generic answer, but what I want to say is that this is driving any action all across the function, you know, from an R&D point of view, from a marketing point of view, from a sales point of view, from a logistic point of view. Mm-hmm. So everything has to be aligned to what actually you wanna, you know, define inside mm-hmm. this. So it's not that there is one key element. I mean, obviously the mix right now, if you think about the digital, you know, when I started marketing, digital was nowhere. I mean, you were still going through tests that were lasting 9 months and, you know, with thousands of people writing on paper. Now you can do a lot of analysis, you know, simply using web tools, and especially the communication piece is completely different. Mm. And I think obviously digital is an important piece. I don't believe it's still going to be just digital, you know, not yet, at least, you know, until at least the level of the world is going to be completely digitalized, put it like that. But definitely, you know, then you have different tools now to fulfill what you need. But the lens has to start from, you know, what is the brand equity and how to valorize and keep increasing the value of this long-term relationship with consumers.
Very interesting. You know, and I've often said that brands are like children. They need continuous input for them to thrive and grow. And I think that's exactly what you're saying. Okay. But, no, absolutely. But you know, in a digital world, and you did speak about digital a little bit, yeah. In a digital world, what should brands be doing to succeed? I mean, you know, they're being bombarded from all over by multiple types of media, by small brands, you know, Me Too players, et cetera, et cetera.
Look, I mean, if I knew exactly what to do, I'd be, you know, probably sitting on a 100-meter yacht in this
moment. I agree with you.
I don't think
what's would be important.
My juice or something.
Maybe based on what you tell me, I'll get myself a 100-meter yacht.
But, I mean, first of all, I believe is, you know, the type of communication with people now is about content, how to engage different people. And we have seen, I mean, you know, we have seen great successes and massive failures, right? So is I would say still today is more as an art than a science, notwithstanding, you know, that big providers are telling you that they know exactly what's happening, what's going through the mind of people. We may get there one day. I don't believe it's there yet.
Sure.
I think it's, you know, for example, the use of social media. I believe at the end of the day, if you don't cover subjects which are relevant and engaging with consumer and you're just to sell stuff, social media is completely useless. Actually, it's dangerous because, you know, you can fool somebody many times, you can fool many people a few times, but not everybody all the time. All right. So I think in terms of content, how to engage people, if I don't have an exact answer, I believe that if you want to make it right, you have to make it relevant. And so go through content that are generally attractive to potential consumers. And obviously, you know, you want to become a kind of thought leader in that sense, depending on the kind of brand, you know, it's got to be linked a specific area.
Sure.
And then I think, you know, but to me, it's a long term. Now, forget fads, you know, something that suddenly goes up like this, because I've seen things going up like that and going down like
correct.
That's not a business. Hmm. You know, in any company, there's been a moment when I was in US where, you know, the trade and everybody was talking about this challenger brands, right? Hmm. Look, I mean, obviously, you're seeing one out of 10,000 brands that are launched that is having success.
Correct.
That's not the norm. That's not the norm. So I think the point is, if you have a strong brand, you have to make sure that the brand is still relevant. And obviously, you may want to look at different brand or whatever. But, you know, as a marketeer, I love to create new stuff, right? I mean, that's inside us. But business-wise, you have to make a proposition that stands on its feet. And it's amazing how little finance background and basic understanding a lot of people have. I mean, I'm surprised. Even big company, sometimes either they are very smart, much smarter than I am, which is absolutely, you know, plausible. But then you see that after 2 or 3 years, these things are not very even relevant.
Very interesting. So one more question on brand before I move to the next segment. You know, when I was growing up as a marketer, the most important thing was to have a strong distribution to make sure that The products were available in the neighborhood store. Now with e-commerce,
this is a tough one to this. Yes.
Absolutely. Now with e-commerce, the goods are being delivered home. How are brands readjusting to this new normal of distribution?
I mean, and Ashutosh, obviously, just to be, you know, fair. Mm. I mean, Earth is not flat in that sense. I mean, you know, you're living in the most complex country in the world in terms of distribution. I mean, Unilever is known to have, you know, among the best distribution ever there because it's been there forever, right? For example, if you go to Latin America, probably Brazil and Mexico are also very complex for different reasons. US, huge market, but you got some big, big distributors you can cover
the entire country. Yeah. Well,
again, distribution of e-commerce in Australia started not long ago because of the size of the critical mass and whatever. So, but if we forget the differences, what you're saying is absolutely correct. Now there is this possibility for people just to be home and click and get the stuff. Mm. Now, in terms of producer, I believe there is a key need to understand how the overall chain works in the sense that, you know, if you want to sell, let's say, this phone as an example, you sell it the same way in the retailer and online, I mean, that's not going to work because your costs are going to be totally prohibitive. And so I think, you know, if you look at especially goods that are lower margin, you have work on the packaging, work on the size, you know, work on the product itself. So you have to develop a product mix which can sustain a structure online that at this point, I'm not sure anybody's making money. By the way, some people are making money, but are the people that have been able, you know, to give an example, in China, when I was in Campbell, we bought a company in which is called Kelsen in Denmark. And the reason why I wanted that company is because they had a good distribution in China, especially for Chinese New Year, you know, is a habit to give cookies and everything. But we discovered, and we were sure that, you know, that was the biggest brand and whatever. But then we discovered there was an online brand that was selling twice as much as we did. Mm-hmm. It was present only online.
Okay.
We had all type of format and strategy that was absolutely focused on that. So I believe, you know, it's the challenge is going to be how you structure your company to be able to be successful through a channel which requires tools, logistics, and cost structure, which is different from the one that you're going to have on brick and mortars. I don't believe it's going to be, you know, the online, I think if you go through the footprint, I'm not sure it's a cheap, alternative also from a sustainability point of view. Imagine all the stuff that, you know, people are very sensitive to the environment, but then they are ordering, you know, I don't know, one small thing and it comes with a package like that. And so, sooner or later, there's going to be, you know, the understanding that there must be some way of better managing this. But anybody that wants to be successful, now you can be successful just going online, for example.
Correct.
And you don't need a massive structure in terms of HQ, which, by the way, with the new world, I'm not sure headquarters are going to be a lived experience. But that's me.
Correct. Well said. So I'm going to move to some questions for you personally. I have time for maybe three, maybe four questions. So Luca, you know, amazing amount of success, went through a life-changing experience. What does success mean to Luca?
That's a good question. Look, for me, success is to feel good with myself at the end of the day. I mean, obviously, now, just want to make sure that, you know, we got a level of transparency. Obviously, you know, if you are an ambitious person, you want to do certain things, you want to do certain things. I mean, you need, I would say you need those milestones of achievements, of success to kind of, you know, keep progressing on a journey, if you will, right?
Yeah.
So, by the way, the success, the way I see success now at my age is different from the
way.
So I just want to make sure that, you know, people will say, I mean, oh my God, I mean, you know, that's the kind of guy coming out of a mountain. No, it's not. You know, you get to certain points through a process.
I agree.
Right. You know, when I was 30, success, I mean, when I was 20, success for me was becoming a general manager.
Correct.
That was my definition of success.
Correct.
All the rest didn't matter. If I had to go through a wall, work like, you know, 20 hours a day, that was it. And sure. I was lucky enough to get, you know, I was 30, 31 when I was promoted to GM. So that was a kind of success. Though you have to realize that those situations are temporary and are a stepping stone in a journey. So to me, success is to have the sense of balance, the sense of on one side of balance and on the other side of push to do something more. I mean, you know, it's a dynamic concept. I struggle, you know, to see success as a static concept. I don't see that.
Okay. And a follow-up question to that is, who or what inspires you to keep doing so many amazing things?
Well, I mean, first of all, thanks for the many amazing things. I don't know if I ever done those.
Look at your career. It's fantastic.
But, you know, I would say you look up at people better than you. Mm-hmm. And there are many. Mm-hmm. And, even in my team. I mean, absolutely. The biggest push, look, the biggest satisfaction for me was to have the blessing to work with people I love to work with. Mm-hmm. People I love to work with are people that are inspiring, are people that have a certain value set, are people that, you know, are not happy with just the status quo. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing is, you know, to be never happy. Mm-hmm. One thing is to appreciate what you have. Mm-hmm. Two different concepts, all right? So I'm very appreciative of what I have. That doesn't mean that I don't find the reason why to keep doing something more, which is not just about money or titles, all right? It's a matter about your growth, your personal growth. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, definitely people, the mentors I had in my life, huge inspiration. Mm-hmm. You know, I got three people that really changed my life, and those people have been with me always. Unfortunately, two of them are not with us. But those are things, you know, elements that definitely inspire me.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And my last question to you now, you know, and this is for the thousands of people who will listen to you and me speak. You know, Luca, you've reached the top of so many organizations. You've run so many businesses. What would your advice be to a young individual starting off on their corporate journey?
Yeah. Look, I am, okay, I'm going to say a statement that is going to sound a little bit extreme and counterintuitive, right? Mm-hmm. But overall, I don't care about what people think of me. Hmm. All right. And let me, let's say, split this concept. Hmm. To me, the most relevant element for me to choose a person, when I look at a person to hire or to choose, I look at the value set, I look at the attitude, and then obviously I look at skills.
Correct.
Now, if you believe in certain norms, in certain values, you should be, I mean, behaving following those norms. This is going to attract around you people that have the same value set. Mm-hmm. That's going to build strength. Okay. If you are going to play somebody you're not, you're going to fall sooner or later. Mm-hmm. This does not mean that, oh, you know, you need to do just what you like or you need to wait for a good. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, I do believe if you want to, even if you are in the smallest and the lowest possible position, your behavior has to be consistent with your value set. Mm. So this is the most important element that will drive you through, you know, the 20, 30, 40, 50 years of career. And obviously, the area where you're going to orient this element is in areas that you like. Mm. If you don't find something you like, you still have to need, I think it's important not to just wait and see what to do. You do what you can do with what you have, and then you keep pushing, improving. So to me, it's a journey, really, truly. It's a journey. The value is in the journey, but what really makes you special and unique is the way you live your value set. Mm-hmm. And to me, in the long run, that allowed me, for example, to attract the people that I wanted. Correct. You know, and you can learn from those people because, you know, there's also this other concept. More you go up, less the specific technical skills. I mean, you need to master a number of, I mean, you know, it's Okay, I mean, it's not, you know, you don't get a surgeon that doesn't know how to cut, right? I mean, that's, but what is really important is that, you know, your capability of selecting people, your capability to sustain people and give them the proper level of resources so that they can be successful. And especially, you need to be very open with your team about the fact that you don't know as much as they do in certain specific area.
Okay.
It's nothing wrong. Mm. And so I think that's, to me, a good dose of humility and being at the service of people that work with you, I think it's very helpful.
Fantastic. Luca, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I wish you good health and success in everything you do.
Thanks, Ashutosh, and the same to you. And you know, hopefully this year is going to be, let's say, a normal year. Normal year.
I hope so. We deserve it.
A great day.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the Brand Called You.